You are listening to episode 90 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, The Battle of Three Conferences. The reason, though, is because, as we have already established, I was in Las Vegas.
I work for HP.
I don't think I said that today. But I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Yeah, like, that's really funny. You didn't say that, and this is, like, the most important day for you to say that.
So it's all right. We got it.
Let's clarify. Yeah.
Yeah. Over an hour in, we got it. So I work for HP. I don't represent HP or any of HP's opinions, which is going to be interesting, because this week I was at HP Discover in the Lost Vegas. And it's crazy, man. So they, like, pretty much took over a floor of the Venetian Hotel, the Sands Convention Center. They just owned it, along with advertising all over Las Vegas. They spent some money. I think the stat was 10,000 people showed up to this convention.
Holy cow. That is a lot of people.
It was a lot of people. And there were booths. There were over 1,000 booths, over 6,000 like breakout sessions. 6,000 breakout sessions. Kind of hard to keep
track
of.
How many of those did you go to?
Six or seven.
Well, you know, 0.1%.
Yeah. It turned out I didn't get to go to as many things as I wanted to, because I'm on a secret team helping to create and launch a new product later this year that I can't talk about, but it's going to be awesome. And I had an opportunity to...
Oh, wait. Can we clarify something really quick?
Sure.
Can you talk about it off the show?
And maybe.
Wink if the answer is yes, but not on the camera so anybody can see.
No, we can't talk about it at all. I already told you about it. But anyways.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I had an opportunity to share it in the non-disclosure zone.
And,
so they let a guy in the press in without knowing it. So I can't talk about anything in there, which, quite frankly, is where the really cool stuff is, but that's all right. HP can innovate, too. I know.
Painful.
Matthew, you don't understand. Afterwards, so I was demoing this product to those people throughout the floor, and then they asked me to stay a day later, which I was already planning on doing anyways, to do the demo for an internal meeting, and I was the second one in line to show what we were coming up with, so I got to watch the one before me.
Yeah.
HP does have the ability to innovate. And they... Whatever. I saw stuff and went, that's cool. That's genuinely cool. And I can't say what it was, which is annoying.
Gradients and translucent panels innovating cool, or...
Let me just say, I went, ooh, I would buy that. That's cool.
So, that's pretty good.
I mean, assuming price points, I guess, but...
As far as standards, you know, of cool go, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I was there. I didn't get to go as much as I wanted to because I had that opportunity to share this product, and so I chose to do that instead of just, like, going everywhere all the time. Though I think I only did that. I did half as many as I could have as a result. It was neat. Kevin Bacon showed up. He was part of the keynote presentation, which is cool.
It's awesome.
So I'm like...
Did you get to meet him?
One step closer to him now. no, I didn't. I'm not that cool. I did meet some other people, which was neat. The HP Discover event was really IT-focused, which, you know, as a guy in a podcast that covers consumer stuff, we're like, okay, less cool.
Right.
But, you know, a ton of stuff about servers and storage, which there's some cool things that they're doing. Sorry, I'm typing and it freaks out.
I'm going to say, dude. I could tell.
I know. It's done. Okay, I'm done. So a couple observations. A, the thing is massive. Tons of CIOs were there and, you know, learning about it. The other one, which I thought was interesting, a lot more Android phones than iPhones at the event. I mean, like,
really?
Significant. It was easily a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 ratio.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of Samsungs and HTCs. Sorry, what?
Is that because it was a bunch of IT people?
Yeah, I think so. A bunch of geeks roaming around. yeah, and NHP's definitely, you know, got in the bed with the Android system. And so a lot of Elite Pads and Slates around. But yeah, I was kind of like, wow, there are a ton of Android users here. And they all had their phones out and stuff. So that was just an interesting focus.
Right.
So couple things. HP showed off their new Moonshot servers and gave some stats on them. So they, again, Kevin Bacon was talking about all the connections in the world and like the results of that. And those connections require a lot of data and stuff like that. And HP was saying that they were looking at the trends of the amount of sharing and content that's being created, and therefore like the amount of storage and servers that will be required to service these. They're like, you know, you think about the number of smartphones, those all connect to the network somehow and all have processes that need to be managed. That requires a server farm of some sort to do it. And they were...
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And so their whole thing was like, we started doing the math on what was going to be required in order to do this, and they were like, what was the number? It was ridiculous. Like, it was... For every, you know, 100 million, billion stuff, the end result was, like, over the next 5 years, they would have to create, like, 10... We would have to build 10 new PowerPoints to power the data centers required to run all the services we demand.
Wow.
Exactly. That was their reaction. Like, and we decided that's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Like, I would agree with that sentiment.
Yeah.
So they've created this new server technology that shrinks it all down, and which I don't understand it at all. They were talking about stuff. But the extent of they were like, it uses, what was it? It was ridiculous. It was like 98% less energy, 70% less space, and there was one other ridiculous stack where they were just like, yeah, and you can do stuff a lot faster than normal too. And...
Good.
You know, right. I mean, it was just like, they were talking about it, and they were like, so we have HP.com. They have HP.com. They said the entire thing, which gets like, it was ridiculous, like 300 million hits a month, something like that. Like, yeah, we're running on 3 of these servers now.
Whoa.
We are able to run HP.com on less than 16 household light bulbs worth of energy.
What the heck?
Exactly, right?
How much do these cost? I want one.
They're not cheap. Not cheap at all.
Yeah, I believe it.
They're designed for data center folks. And, you know, so it was like, whoa, that's, you know, that's legitimately cool. And so they were like, yeah, we're getting big into the space. I guess HP is number 2 in the server/storage market.
Right.
And they're trying to become number 1 by doing these things. And so, yeah, so I was like, wow, that's legitimately awesome and something that should be celebrated. Another thing that I saw that I went to was a talk about the future of HP Labs. And I was pumped about this one. I was like, I know they're not going to tell me anything like secret. I know. But they, again, they said our focus is on these servers and, you know, the IT type stuff. And so one of the things they talked about, they said they're talking about microgrids, where these are zero environmental impact types of places where they're able to save a ton of energy and get a ton of energy from, you know, sun and solar and stuff like that. And like, so the net impact, zero.
That's cool.
Yeah, and they were like, we even figured out how to put these things on trucks, so if we needed one in the middle of Africa, we could just take it there and hook it up and it's done. It doesn't require anything else. It just will work. Or you have an event, and for whatever crazy reason, you need some servers there to service all the network or something. I don't know. Like South by Southwest. Like,
let Google know about this, because this is a big deal.
Yeah, so they were talking about some of the things that they're doing there, which I was like, dude, that's awesome. They also talked about, you know, here you go. They are figuring out how to use Memristors with their servers.
Finally.
Because they were like, this is a place where we can own the entire stack, and we don't have to worry about it integrating with other companies and people. It just will work the way you expect it to. Or, you know, it'll just work within our ecosystem that we create for our server farms, and that's where it makes sense at scale to do those types of things.
Right.
So they're like, we're doing Memristors. They're like, also Photonics. And nice. This guy was funny. He's like, if you think about it, copper is bad for the environment. It's slow, whatever. Let's just use light.
Like, that's awesome.
That's cool.
I like your plan.
Let's do that. And so there, a lot of their focus is on doing things a lot more efficiently and faster, I guess. And then they talked about they're building on top of these data centers both visual analytics so that you can very quickly look at a dashboard and figure out what's going on. And also, like, he called them algorithm analytics, where it'll do load balancing and other types of networking things that it'll just do them in real time, fast, and so it'll be a lot more efficient, where you won't have to have a bunch of space just in case. It's like, that won't be needed, because we'll be smart enough to move everything around where it needs to go and use stuff that's not being used right now, or... I didn't fully understand it, but I was like, oh, sounds cool.
It sounds very neat.
I like it. That could work.
I said, nice. Nice job, guys. So it's Hansel quote. I've never really listened to the music, but I'm really inspired by the fact that he's doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was neat. That was one of the other talk that I went to that I know for certain that you will get a kick out of was called Disruptive Trends Shaping the Future of Tablets and Wearables.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I'll ask you the same question I ask everybody else. Should I buy a Pebble?
So this was really interesting, actually, because he did talk about watches, and this was cool. He sat there and said, okay. He said there's two, like, big things that are going on. Watches are one, this idea of information displays and whatever, and then health is another space that seems to be a big deal. As you've seen with the Fitbit, the Up, the Nike Fitband. He's like, those seem to be... there's a lot of movement in those particular areas. He also talked about glasses, but said, like, the problem with glasses, which is exactly what Tim Cook said, he's like, they're highly personal. And the closer you get to your body, the more personal it is. You know, people personalize the desktops on their computers. They might have added a couple stickers with their phones. They're adding cases. They're adding all sorts of stuff to it. They're very personal. You imagine these wearables that are on your body, especially something that's on your face that everyone looks at. He's like, you've got to be able to personalize that to the max. And he's like, I don't know if we're quite ready to go there. But he's like, it will. There's no question about it. It'll happen. But he said, like, watches are the current space, and so are these, health sensors. And this was – I really like this one example he gave. He goes, okay. First he showed this chart. It's just this – it, you know, sears your brain chart, where it's all these different watch products, and then you had all the stats, the number of sensors, the battery, the operating system, the chip type, just like, he had broke them all down. And he goes, what do you notice about these? Like, it's hard to read, I don't know. He goes, I'll tell you. He goes,
you're bad at making slides. That's what I noticed.
He goes, you notice that every single one of these is using a different chip and a different operating system. He goes, there's nobody winning here. There's no dominant player. This is a wide open field. And then he flipped over to the health bands, the exact same situation. He goes, here's what I want you to understand the opportunity space that we're looking at and why this is huge. Let's use the Nike Fuel Band as an example. He goes, what is it? It's a small piece of plastic, a display that you can barely read, and he goes, and it has a single sensor inside of it. Is that right?
Yeah.
$150 is what they're charging. He goes, and sales are through the roof of this thing. Okay?
Yeah.
It was super popular. He goes, now let's contrast this. HP has a slate that is for $169, so $20 more. He goes, you get a 7-inch piece of glass. It's got 7 sensors inside of it. It runs a full operating system and does all these other things and has a battery, you know, life that's not as good, but, you know, it's, he goes, it's a good tablet, which I would agree. It's a good looking tablet. He goes, do you think there's a little bit of margin built into Nike's fuel band?
Yeah.
And he goes, so we're talking about an industry where he's like, the margins are awesome and people are buying them like crazy. Yeah, I think this is where we're all going to go.
Yeah.
And when you think about it like that, you're like, yeah, no doubt about it. And yes, Apple is looking into it. Yes, Google's looking into it. So is Amazon and every single other hardware manufacturer, probably including HP and including Dell. Okay, maybe not Dell because they're focused on other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, I don't have any insider information. I don't know about HP. But he's like, duh, Apple's working on a watch. You know, it's just, of course.
Yeah, it's funny. When you put it in that context, it just becomes, it's like, how are you and I not looking into making watches?
Right?
Is it just, you know, they're... Because I keep thinking about the fact that I really am bummed that I lost my Fitbit, but it's just hard to justify that extra $100. Now, I have noticed that I don't know how much I'm moving anymore, and I like keep thinking I should just get a pedometer and, you know, but at the same time, you know, like a $10 one, I probably should just get one and see if that would work. But I keep, you know, I want the Fitbit because it was awesome and it had the whole Bluetooth thing and like allowed me to compete with people. Blah, blah, blah. But I wonder, yeah, I there's a part of me that's like, it's $100 for that little piece of thing? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, that's expensive.
Yeah,
you're still paying for the R&D of the first version is what you're doing.
Right, right. And their wristband version's even more expensive. And he just is like, that's crazy. I can't understand how. And the worst part about the wristband one is not only is it more expensive, but it doesn't have the meter that like the
stairs part.
Called? Yeah, it's not a barometer, but it works like a barometer. And, you know, and or maybe it is a barometer. Whatever. Your altitude measurement. And you sit there and go, like, you took away a sensor and you put put 3 cents of plastic into it so that you could put it in, turn it into a wristband, and you charge $50 more. What the heck? It doesn't even make sense. And, you know, and they're doing the same thing of like, well, people don't need the altimeter. That's what it's called. People don't need the altimeter. They're not that excited about it. But pretty much they just want a little accelerometer that costs, you know, 13 cents worth of silicon. And they hook it up to a Bluetooth antenna. And boom, we're out the door for $20 or we're selling it for $150.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck? That's ridiculous. But yeah, and so when you put it in that context of what the margins are like on that, that is Apple margin territory. That's the sort of thing that Apple gets really excited about.
Dude, that's not just Apple. That's like drug margin.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Gangster money on that stuff.
Exactly. And you sit there and you go, when you realize that, that's when the big boys decide, we're going to play in your space and we're going to crush you like a bug.
Well, and we're going to charge a fair price. And, you know, right. we'll start out a little higher. Don't get us wrong. But we'll come out and say, yeah, it's only $50, which is, again, I HP's example with the slate. They went, no, we're not going to charge $250. We can make it for $170. We can make it for $150. We'll sell it for $170. And we'll just sell a ridiculous number.
Well, yeah, and what you'll see is you'll see Apple sell their watch for $200 and HP sell their watch for $100. And you're talking about a full-featured watch with the screen, Bluetooth, pedometer, accelerometer, blah, 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 you know, the whole nine yards, and they'll be the exact same phone, they'll be the exact same system, it's just one will have all of the amazingness that is Apple, and one will have all of the plasticness that is HP, that was mean, but, you know, especially since you guys make aluminum computers now, they look kind of nice, but,
I actually do look kind of cool.
I know. It's a good look. It's hard to go wrong with it, really. I mean, it was a good call on Johnny Ive's part, the man who doesn't exist.
The legend.
Exactly. It's it's one of those things where, yeah, I don't know. It definitely feels like, but it's entirely possible that everybody's going to shrug their shoulders and go, sounds to me like the price point's $150 that people are willing to pay for. So maybe we will sell ours for $149.
Yeah, I think they're going to look at you're going to look at the volumes of that stuff, and I know, looking at HP's track record, they're going to, they tend to price it aggressively.
You think it'll
hardware.
Be a super race to the bottom, though?
Well, you know, that's...
They're
going to do the math, and they're going to say, yeah, we could probably sell a couple million of them at 150, or we could sell 100 million at 50. That's the game that they play. And then they're going to say, and we'll lock him into our technology and ecosystem, and it'll be great. Or something. So I think it'll happen. I think Apple will still price $200 and sell more than anybody else, because it will look amazing. And but anyways, so this was this talk. And then what he said, it's going to take another step where we are increasing the number of sensors attached to us, and they're getting closer to us. And he was talking about how eventually it's going to take into account our context of the situation we're in, not just us, which, you know, you're like, yeah, it's headed there. And he just talked about how we're going to have all this data, essentially, that's being collected, and we're going to get better about processing that data, even in, like, real time, which I was like, man, you're talking about automating my job. That's all right. I guess that's cool. I can find a new one, I guess. but and he gave this really cool example, because he's like, because it's not only going to be on people, it'll be on things. And the example he gave was, he says, you have an airplane. And then we're going to have sensors everywhere on this airplane. And it'll be to the point where when the plane takes off, all these sensors are recording data and information about, you know, all the way from simple things like the, what are those, like joints, anywhere where things move, to engine temperatures and speeds and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And it'll be analyzing all those movements in real time while the plane is flying. And by the time it lands, this airplane will send a report to the mechanic on the ground that prints off, here's your to-do list of the things to look into. You know, here's the 10 things that, you know, this needs to be greased, or this nut needs to be tightened, or, you know, there was an issue here that it looks into. It's like, and it'll be doing all of this analysis in real time, cognitive computing, to figure out what's going on, and you'll instantly be able to, you know, they'll do a better job of maintaining these airplanes, and it'll save them a ton of money, and they'll actually get it in the ground, you know, they'll actually get things going a whole lot faster. Give another example of, like, the air conditioning in this building. They're like, dude, it's probably like 5 megawatts just to cool this place. It's unbelievable. They're like, what if you had sensors on each of the different units, and you could tell, okay, this place is cooler, this place is warmer, and you could rebalance it and be a little bit more efficient about how it goes. So you're like, you'll actually save some money. And that's valuable. And, you know, sort of like, so we're going to get them on people, and we're going to get them on things, and we're going to connect them all to the internets, and the NSA is going to love it. And then what we're going to do is find better ways to analyze it and connect everything together. And it will, in the meantime, we'll actually save time and resources, but somehow we'll all be working more.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. But yeah, that was the kind of the picture that was painted for the future, which a lot of the stuff we've talked about, I think even last week we talked about that whistle product for Fido, and you know, which I think falls into that same category of just adding sensors everywhere. But that was definitely a huge theme at HP Discover. HP gets it. They see it, and they're trying to provide the back end to enable all of that.
That's pretty cool. I mean, that is forward thinking. I mean, because you know, that makes sense. As there's more and more data, it needs to be processed somewhere. A lot of it will be done on your phone.
So their goal is to store it cheaper and to analyze it faster. They did give a cool example of NASCAR, where, you know what NASCAR is. They
no, what is NASCAR?
They it's these cars that go around the track at unsafe speeds.
Yeah, they turn right a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And so what they were talking about doing with that one is they wanted to do some social sentiment analysis, and so HP put together a system where they were just, you know, vacuuming in all the data, like again the NSA, and which is, they're not alone collecting data right. on what we say and do. That was my big takeaway. I was like, then this is different from other companies for profit. How? But they're vacuuming. They're, you know, collecting a whole bunch of social data, whether it's tweets or status updates or probably not text messages and emails, but public information. Maybe that's the difference. And
it is a big difference.
And they're helping them analyze it in real time, so they can find out what people are talking about and then address it. The example they gave was they developed this new technology for drying the track after it rains to like a quarter of the time to do it. So what used to be like a 3-hour process, they can do it in like a half hour. That's not
because they can't drive on the track if there's any
at unsafe speeds.
If any wetness at all. I mean, like the track has to be pristine in order to not kill everybody, which they occasionally do anyway.
Yeah. So what they were able to do was they found that a lot of people that are waiting for it to start were tweeting about it and talking about it and asking questions. Well, what is this? This is new. This is different. And so they were in real time able to go, oh, this is cool. Let's do a spot. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about this thing. And so that's what they did. They filled the time. Instead of talking about the racers and who's better than what, they're like, let's talk about how the thing's being dried. Because they knew in real time, and they didn't even think about it beforehand, that people would be interested in how this is being done. And so they were like, you know, advertisers loved it because people were tuning in. The fans loved it because we explained what was going on and we were being responsive to them. And so that was just an example of one of the things that HP is helping companies do. We'll store the data. We'll help you collect it. We'll help you store it. And then we'll help you analyze it in a way that's meaningful, fast, so that you can respond and, you know, do cool stuff with it.
Right.
Yeah, it was neat. There's my HP commercial. I don't represent them, but it's genuinely cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, no, that's cool. I like it. They talked about other stuff, but...
Say, you know, I don't know how much I can complain about your HP commercial, considering the fact that we had a almost 45-minute long Apple commercial followed by a 30-minute long Sony commercial, so it's...
That's
I don't
true.
Know if anybody who's any of our listeners have really realized that's what we are. We're just a commercial service.
Was neat. They talked about they're working to try to help people make cross-platform apps a lot faster.
That's a big one for
but
me.
Not the,
I
not,
wish there was a lot more.
Not the way
that,
Adobe
but.
Does it. They're like, yeah, we've hired like 700 developers, and you can hire us as a service to help you out.
Oh, wow. Oh,
jeez. Like, well, that's kind of, what was the word I had for that one? Where I was just like, oh, that's just a brute force method. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Clean, simple, maybe not. Effective, probably not. Or efficient, definitely not. Nope. Or effective, though, yeah, I'd say.
Gets the job done.
Effective.
You know, but their whole thing is, and again, they're not like going to help out Foursquare do it. It's you're a big IT company that has an in-house app. They'll help you roll it out to all the other systems for your employees, not necessarily a public-facing app.
That's cool.
Is really HP's focus because they're like, you know, bring your device to work is kind of a real thing. It's happening. That's something that you have to deal with whether you like it or not. And apparently for a lot of these companies, I laughed at this, there'll be subgroups where you get some techie guy in there, he goes, oh, I built an app for the group. And the group will start using it. And now here you have this, you know, this CIO who's like, whoa, what the heck? We got all these apps popping up that people are using that are not sanctioned at all. And now they're asking me to build them an Android version. You know, or it breaks and they come to them for tech support. He's like, we don't support this. But that's that's also not a viable answer because now workflows have been created around it and it's important.
I'm going to say, it's now part of your workflow and it's you know, yeah, that's terrible. That's awesome. Oh, man, I love the future. I love technology.
So HP's trying to, they're like, you know, we're not ignoring it. And I like this. They said, and of course, we're building the tools and a system to work really well with Elite pads and slates and printers.
Yeah.
So that.
I'm going to say, and printers.
Well, and so their whole thing is, well, of course, we will play nice with everybody, but we're also going to try to set it up so that if you are on the fence, you go, oh, I'll go with HP, because they just made my life a little easier by doing a little better integration than, you know, say, going with Apple or Dell or something. And so. Yeah. You know, which you're like, dude, that's
strategy.
Awesome. You know, yeah, no, that's that totally makes sense. No matter what, you're happy, you're adding value, and if you can even take it just that one step further to say, yeah, and you play in our ecosystem, it'll be even better. Like, that's cool. So that was my week for the most part. Just taking all that in. I ate a ton of food. It was all free, which was really nice. I walked around a lot. There were a lot of people, like I said.
Yeah.
A lot of HP blue, for sure. I don't know how much money they spent on putting this thing together, but man, it was big. Because they had demos. They had over like these stations, and there were over 1,000 of them because they had them all numbered, and there were more than 1,000. Where you could just walk up, and they'd tell you about, oh, here's the thing we're working on, and they'd show you a demo of it if it made sense, or show you the product, and, you know, you could check it out. They, like I was talking about one of those modular server things. They actually brought one inside, so you could check it out.
Whoa.
Yeah. No, it was huge. It was huge, for sure. Man, it was unbelievable. But yeah, Meg was there, of course. She spoke a little bit about the future.
Hutman?
Yep, that's the one. And then a bunch of other execs got up and made speeches the next day. Which was cool. You know, they showed off some of the new products we're working on and what they're doing. We were like, and we're making it so you can print from your mobile phones on all of our new printers. It's awesome. And they did a demo of that, which was... I was like, oh, that's a LaserJet product. Yeah, I care. And, yeah.
It's cool, man.
It was neat. So there you go. That was HP Discover. I don't know if I'll go next year. I didn't really. It was like $1,200 to go. Oh, and the other thing is they had a concert of Carlos Santana at MGM Garden Arena.
How's that?
He is a very good musician, and I like his music, so that was good.
Right.
And again, what's awesome about this is you walk into the arena and it's just. Everything's open, like all the food stands and stuff. It's just free. You just, oh, what do you
Whoa.
Want? Here you go. That's where the $1,200 thing comes in. We're like, yeah, no, they bust us over. We walked in. They were like, oh, you want popcorn? No problem. Oh, you want nachos? No problem. Oh, you want a soda? No problem. Oh, you want a beer? No problem. They were.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was.
I'm getting fat just thinking about that.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I was like, wow, man, these guys are. Feed me well. It was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. HP Discover. I discovered a couple things. HP's innovating. You know, they're working on it, which is nice to hear. A little bit of the mojo back.
Yeah. Sweet, man.
For the
I'm
IT
excited.
Folks, at least.
Yeah. I'm excited for the next couple of months. I think there's going to be some good stuff going on, and you know, yeah. Well, that'd be good. So I don't what's our clock at right now? I thought we started at 2 hours ago.
Pretty close. We got like 10 more minutes before we hit the 2 hour mark.
Okay.
Let's talk about this last one real quick because I know you were excited about it.
Yeah. So I'll be honest. I love tech. I love companies competing in consumer stuff and it's just fun. But there's a certain amount of vapidness to the whole thing that rarely actually elicits an emotional enthusiasm for humanity response. Apple does the best out of everybody about making me really excited for, like, man, it's going to be human. And, like, you're helping the world out. And it's like, and because they do just the best commercials. And which is what's interesting about it is that it's like a lot of times this technology is really great and it is really changing lives. And not just, you know, we're not just entertaining ourselves to death, but we're actually affecting the world in a positive way. Apple just does the best job of highlighting that generally. But, This is a project that that Google is getting involved in that on one hand is just like ridiculous and it's okay, that's awesome. On the other hand, it's just absolutely up my alley because it's one of the weird things I have interested in. Another part, just awesome for humanity. It's Project Loon, if you haven't heard about it. It's a little bit loony. Thank you for laughing. Basically, what they're doing is they're going to make a bunch of blimps that just stay up in the atmosphere and do internet. It's great. And because they decided that, that internet is awesome and it changes lives and it, especially and most dramatically, it changes the lives of those who are least able to get it, really. They said a statistic, it's like one out of every two people. We say everybody's online, but that's not true. It's like one out of every two people is online. No, one out of every three. So there's like twice as many people that aren't online as are online, but that's like not, that's assuming normal distribution of human beings. Whereas like, obviously there's a higher concentration of internet connected to peeps in first world countries. So it's like in a lot of areas in the world, you'll get entire regions where there's 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000 that are connected to the internet. And so they were asking the question, how do we close that gap? How do we make the areas where it's 1 in 10,000 smaller? And how do we make the areas where it's, 1 in 1,000 where we get it down to 1 out of 2? How do we get everybody the internet? And obviously one side of that equation is you have to have a device that connects to the internet, which really has been something that, projects like $100 laptop. What?
OLPC.
What's that one?
One laptop per child.
Yeah, there we go. $100 laptop. Okay. I was like, what is that acronym? But yeah, that's something that they've been hitting on. But their strategy had always been like, how do we bring the internet to that? And so they had their like weird ad hoc network, well, weird but amazing ad hoc networking thing, which would like, it would basically leapfrog, daisy chain, and so it was like super slow internet, but it was internet and it would go across everywhere. But they did that big experiment. OLPC did that big experiment where they basically, it wasn't a huge experiment, but they did with the Ethiopia, and they just dropped off a box and left. And the box had a bunch of tablets in it that were designed to educate and teach them how to use the tablets, and it was in their language. And they found that after like 3 months, some kid had already like rooted the sucker, and well, they didn't rooted it, but they had gone through and they had figured out how to get around the security so that they had been able to customize them all. And they're like, what the heck, how are these kids be able to do this? This is awesome. And they're like learning, and they're learning how to spell, and they're learning how to read, and they're learning in a real significant way. And the only real limitation that these devices had for these children is that there's no internet. They had nothing more than what was already on the device. And so if you could hand this device to these kids, and these things were cheap tablets. They were like less than $100 tablet, full touch integration. You hand these kids the tablet and an internet connection, and you could really significantly alter the course of humanity. And it's like, when you watch Star Trek, a lot of Star Trek is like, especially the technology, and the reason why where they are is because of stuff like the replicator, where they talk about the idea that like, we just suddenly realized we had enough for everybody, so good times, yay, it's like, and like a lot of the peace and enthusiasm for prosperity and the raising people out of poverty came from the free share of infinite amounts of information. That's what Google's like, I think we can do this. I actually think we can do this. And they're doing it with remote control blimps, which is just like awesome, really awesome, specifically for me, because I
kind of like, how do I get into this group?
I'm not even joking about that. I've been coming up with a strategy like the last few days, because I was thinking, basically what I need to do is I need to find out like somebody in the group, and I need to basically say, look, I just want to find out what you guys are doing because I think it's awesome, so let me take you out to lunch sometime, and start like that sort of informational interviewing. Like, I'm just curious. I want to meet you people because I think this is awesome. And it's the sort of thing where I'll never get invited to be part of that group. I would drop my job that I have and I love so fast if they would bring me into that group, it would make people's heads spin. Because that's the sort of thing where it's like, you know, remote control blimps are just awesome. If you're not familiar with a remote control blimp, like commercial grade remote control blimp, it's super lame. They're the dumbest thing in the world. I mean, like, they work, but there's just not a big market for it, so there's no real innovation in it. So I'm like, all of my RC like experimentation is all pointed in the direction of building my own remote control blimps. And so basically they're going like, yeah, we're going to do that. And we're going to change people's lives with them. I'm just, oh my gosh, this is the coolest project. Like, the way people get excited about, you know, like, this, I don't know, this is the kind of stuff that I wish Apple would do occasionally. Like, we've got tons of money, so we're just going to shoot for the moon in a real, and Google occasionally does actually shoot things for at the moon. So it's not necessarily the greatest analogy, but,
no, I understand what you're saying, though.
But that idea, we're gonna try to change the world, and this one's one of those like ridiculous ones where it's like, yeah, it makes some money because, you know, like in a very tangential way, if everybody has the internet, then everybody can use Google and that'll make them money, blah 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 blah. But I get the feeling that as far as they're concerned on this sort of one, it's just sort of a, I actually feel like this is a humanitarian project. They're just trying to make the world a better place. This is like the root of their, you know, do no evil. This is like the antithesis of it. We're not trying to avoid being evil here. We're actually trying to be cool. We're trying to be good. Well, I think this one will cost us, you know, and the best part about it is it just so happens to be a service that makes us money. But, you know, eventually, theoretically. But I have a feeling that if this one took off, it would cost way more than they'd ever make up. You know, until you add some real integration on the ground, and the only thing that it does is it accelerates the movement of wireless, hardcore, powerful internet around the world. You know, and actual infrastructure building. That's the only thing that this will do, is it'll accelerate it. And so this is one of those ones where it's like, if you think of this as an investment, it's the sort of long term investment that you can't calculate the value of. It's just it's too complicated an equation. You're just saying, I think this is good. And if it's good for other people, I think it's good for us, so we're going to do it. I don't know. Let's go. You know, and I don't know. It's exciting. It's definitely – it's everything else this week has been, like, awesome. I'm super stoked because I want to buy this. I want to spend my money this way. I want to play with this. I want to talk about it on the show. This is the one that actually is eliciting me to want to change what I do with my life. Because it's the sort of – I'm – sometimes I like to dream about how I could change the world, and this one's, I don't know, it's tangible. They're actually going to try to do it, which is cool.
That is cool.
It's absurd, and it's fun, and it's, I don't know, it's cool. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, sounds like it. You gotta figure that out, man.
I think and the best part is, they probably work down the street from me, so that's awesome. I can do that. Everybody should move to the Silicon Valley. Don't do that. Housing prices is nuts already, man. It's it's stupid. Everybody go away. Bring the prices back down.
Move to Oregon. I already own a couple. Let's increase the prices.
Yeah, exactly. Man, deal.
I like it. Very cool. Yeah, no, it does look like a neat project. It definitely feels more magnanimous than greed-related.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just flat out interesting and neat, and something that you kind of go, yeah, I would expect Google to do something like this. In the sense that
sounds,
it's pretty crazy, but you know,
they're
crazy folks. I like their website too. It's kind of cool how you can,
and their videos were like really inspiring and stuff.
It's like a little kid talking. You know? Check it out.
Yeah,
just well done overall.
Dude, Apple did a 10-minute one about like why apps change the world. That one got me a tingly feeling too. It was a little less high-minded in its, we're just going to try to change the world, but at the same time, they're good at that kind of stuff, man. They make me feel happy for buying an iPhone, which I don't know how that, like, I don't know the connection there at all, but definitely makes me feel good about it.
That's funny. That's the point. Right there, exactly. With Coke, trying to make you emotional appeal.
They have the worst commercials, though. Have you noticed? I tweeted about this while watching.
I know. That's why I mentioned it.
Thank you. While watching Superman.
Don't tell me anything about it. I haven't seen it yet.
I know, I'm not about to say anything. I accept the fact that the Coke commercials are awful. There is absolutely no inspiration at all. They're so bland, and I'm going to use the word vapid again because I'm in the mood to use that word. But it's... they're just... I can't... I mean, they're like... They're worse than styrofoam. I'd rather eat styrofoam than watch those commercials. And that just nothing. There's nothing there.
I'd rather eat styrofoam than watch those commercials.
They're just oh my goodness. And our sister was all up in the T-Swift commercial, but at least that one had like the people like singing along the song and like, you know, like a shared human experience as opposed to what most of theirs are, which like don't even inspire like, yeah, being human is cool and fun sometimes, and I like to drink Coke when I'm being human. At least cool. The Taylor Swift, like, at least that one has an ounce of that. The rest of them, like, oh, I just can't even wrap my head around. And the point is, it's just brand recognition. That you would be better off. I think they would be better off by just putting Coke with pulsating lights and like music. Just notice our brand. Notice our brand. And that's all it is. It's just meant to be nothing. The least aggressive ad campaign of all time. You know, at least with McDonald's, they do stuff that is so pointed at specific demographics where like they're completely market driven. We're trying to appeal to this group, so we're gonna go with every stereotype we can in order to appeal to them, which there's a certain like sociological study in that, and like they're like completely non-offensive stereotypes. It's amazing. They're like, we've done market research so that we know that this is true about this specific ethnic group, so we're going to target them that way. You're like, what the guys, come on. There's like the complete lack of creativity is astounding and kind of offensive, but like with Coke, they don't even go that far. It's just, oh gosh, I don't even know, man. You got me started.
I did. Wow. On that rant, I think we'll close it up for the evening. Good talk. Big things, man. Apple's WWDC, E3 with Sony just killing it in a good way. HP, we discovered a lot about them, and Google attempting to change the world, which is nice. Yes, we did know that Facebook finally got tags. Good for them. Big deal, guys. Changing the world. And Office is coming to the iPhone for 365 subscribers.
We briefly mentioned that.
Cool. But yeah, big week. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. My name is James Frillo, and my brother with the new haircut, which is looking awesome, woo! By the way.
Thank you.
Looking good. His name is Matthew Dean Frillo, and we will talk next time. You know,
we're live and ready.
We're live, ready, broadcasting to the world.
I kind of miss the days where I would say, "Are we live?" Every time, yes, we're live.
For the time being.